A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away.
Penguin Random House Audio presents Rogue Squadron, Star Wars Legends. Rogue Squadron by Michael A. Stackpole. Read for you by Mark Thompson. The Essential Legends Collection. For more than 40 years, novels set in a galaxy far, far away have enriched the Star Wars experience for fans seeking to continue the adventure beyond the screen. When he created Star Wars, George Lucas built a universe that sparked the imagination and inspired others to create. He opened up that universe to be a creative space for other people to tell their own tales. This became known as the Expanded Universe, or EU, of novels, comics, video games, and more. To this day, the EU remains an inspiration for Star Wars creators and is published under the label Legends. Ideas, characters, story elements, and more from new Star Wars entertainment trace their origins back to material from the Expanded Universe. This Essential Legends collection curates some of the most treasured stories from that expansive legacy. 1.
You're good, Corrin, but you're no Luke Skywalker. Corrin Horn's cheeks still burned at the memory of Commander Antilles' evaluation of his last simulator exercise. The line had been a simple comment, not meant to be cruel, nor delivered that way. But it cut deep into Corrin. I've never tried to suggest I'm that good of a pilot.
He shook his head.
No, he just wanted it to be self-evident and easily recognized by everyone around you.
Reaching out, he flicked the starter switches for the X-Wing simulator's engines.
Green One has 4 starts and is go.
All around him in the cockpit, various switches, buttons, and monitors flashed to life.
Primary and secondary power is at full.
Oro Quirk, his Gand wingman, reported similar startup success in a high-pitched voice.
Green 2 is operational.
Green 3 and 4 checked in. Then the external screens came alive, projecting an empty starfield.
Whistler, have you finished the navigation calculations?
The green and white R2 unit seated behind Corrin hooted. Then the nav data spilled out over Corrin's main monitor. He punched a button, sending the same coordinates out to the other pilots in green flight.
Go to light speed and rendezvous on the Redemption.
As Corrin engaged the X-Wing's hyperdrive, the stars elongated themselves into white cylinders, then snapped back into pinpoints and began to revolve slowly, transforming themselves into a tunnel of white light. Corrin fought the urge to use the stick to compensate for the roll. In space, and especially hyperspace, up and down were relative. How his ship moved through hyperspace didn't really matter. As long as it remained on the course Whistler had calculated and had attained sufficient velocity before entering hyperspace, he'd arrive intact.
Flying into a black hole would actually make this run easier.
Every pilot dreaded the Redemption run. The scenario was based on an Imperial attack on evacuation ships back before the first Death Star had been destroyed. While the Redemption waited for 3 medevac shuttles and the corvette Korolev to dock and offload wounded, the Imperial frigate Warspite danced around the system and dumped out TIE fighters and added bombers to the mix to do as much damage as they could. The bombers, with a full load of missiles, could do a lot of damage. All the pilots called the Redemption scenario by another name. the Requiem scenario. The Warspite would only deploy 4 starfighters and a half dozen bombers, known in pilot slang as eyeballs and dupes, respectively. But it would do so in a pattern that made it all but impossible for the pilots to save the Korolev. The Corvette was just one big target, and the TIE bombers had no trouble unloading all their missiles into it. Stellar pinpoints elongated again as the fighter came out of hyperspace. Off to the port side, Corin saw the Redemption. Moments later, Whistler reported that the other fighters and all 3 medevac shuttles had arrived. The fighters checked in, and the first shuttle began its docking maneuver with the Redemption.
Green 1, this is Green 4.
Go ahead, 4.
By the book, or are we doing something fancy?
Corin hesitated before answering. By book, Nawara Venn had referred to the general wisdom about the scenario. It stated that one pilot should play fleet hunt and race out to engage the first TIE flight, while the other 3 fighters remained in close as backup. As long as 3 fighters stayed at home, it appeared the Warspite dropped ships off at a considerable distance from the Korolev. When they didn't, it got bolder, and the whole scenario became very bloody. The problem with going by the book was that it wasn't a very good strategy. It meant one pilot had to deal with 5 TIEs, 2 eyeballs and 3 dupes, all by himself, then turn around and engage 5 more. Even with them coming in waves, the chances of being able to succeed against those odds were slim. Doing it any other way was disastrous. Besides, what loyal son of Corellia ever had any use for odds? By the book, keep the home fires burning, and pick up after me.
John, good luck.
Thanks. Corin reached up with his right hand and pressed it against the lucky charm he wore on a chain around his neck. Though he could barely feel the coin through his gloves and the thick material of his flight suit, the familiar sensation of the metal resting against his breastbone brought a smile to his face.
It worked for you a lot, Dad. Let's hope all its luck hasn't run out yet.
He openly acknowledged that he'd been depending quite a bit on luck to see him through the difficulties of settling in with the Alliance forces. Learning the slang took some work. Moving from calling TIE starfighters eyeballs to calling interceptors squints made a certain amount of sense. But many other terms had been born of logic that escaped him. Everything about the Rebellion seemed odd in comparison to his previous life, and fitting in had not been easy.
Nor will be winning this scenario.
The Korolev materialized and moved toward the Redemption, prompting Corin to begin his final check. He'd mulled the scenario over in his mind time and time again. In previous runs, when he served as a home guard to someone else's fleet hunt, he'd had Whistler record traces on the TIE timing patterns, flight styles, and attack vectors. While different cadets flew the TIE half of the simulations, the craft dictated their performance, and a lot of their initial run sequence had been pre-programmed. A sharp squawk from Whistler alerted Corin to the Warspite's arrival.
Great. 11 clicks aft.
Pulling the stick around to the right, Corin brought the X-Wing into a wide turn. At the end of it, he punched the throttle up to full power. Hitting another switch up to the right, he locked the S-foils into attack position.
Green 1, engaging.
Rosati's voice came cool and strong through the radio.
Be all over them like drool on a hut.
I'll do my best, Green 3.
Corin smiled and waggled the X-Wing as he flew back through the Alliance formation and out toward the Warspite. Whistler announced the appearance of 3 TIE bombers with a low tone, then brought the sound up as 2 TIE fighters joined them.
Whistler, tag the bombers as targets 1, 2, and 3.
As the R2 unit complied with that order, Corin pushed shield power full to front and brought his laser targeting program up on the main monitor. With his left hand, he adjusted the sighting calibration knob on the stick and got the 2 fighters.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?